Is it not true that with every public affirmation comes to us private turmoil? Every time we feel, this is my work to do, immediately questions arise. I'm not sure about that. John, just upon seeing Jesus, of course, knows exactly who this person is. In Matthew's gospel, they haven't met before. In Luke's gospel, they met in utero. We'll let that go. He knows Jesus' status. He knows Jesus' call. Somehow it's written all over him. And John humbles himself appropriately, saying, how is it that I am the one that is supposed to baptize you? And Jesus says, I don't know, man. This is just how it's supposed to go. John says, and finally consents and says, okay, fine. We'll do it this way. And then, as he comes up out of the water, the text says the clouds part and the voice of God speaks as a spirit like a dove descends upon him and names him. Now in the Gospel of Mark, the voice says, you are my beloved, in whom I am well pleased. Suggesting that the voice is telling Jesus, this is who you are. But in Matthew, the voice of God says, this is my son, the beloved, in whom I am well pleased. Suggesting that God is not speaking to Jesus, but to the gathered body. That this is the public affirmation in the beginning of the ministry of Jesus. And immediately after this, what happens? Out to the desert, out into the wilderness, to be tempted by the devil. And the temptations of the devil can be distilled down to, can you prove that you actually have the power that God says you have? But the devil doesn't show up for a full 40 days. Sometimes people read the text and they think that the devil is tempting Jesus for 40 days. But actually, if you read the text says he went out and fasted and prayed for 40 days, and then the devil showed up. And so my question is always, well, what's going on in the head of Jesus for those 40 days? And if Jesus is a human being, I can't help but think that those 40 days are full of the exact same question repeated over and over and over and over and over, which is, are you sure about this? Why me? Are you sure it was supposed to be me? Are you sure that shaft of light wasn't actually falling ever so slightly to the side? Do I deserve this honor, this privilege? I mean, maybe he's got a sense of where this is going to go. He says, well, am I supposed to end this way? Or are they just projecting this onto me? Because they heard it, but maybe they needed to hear it. Maybe they wanted to hear it. Maybe John was tired, and he was just looking for somebody that was pretty enough to carry on the legacy. Because, you know, he was a little rough around the edges, and maybe it was a PR stunt that he was going for here. Are you sure about this? Now, there's a word for this. It's called imposter syndrome, right? I don't know if this is a relatively new phrase, but this is a phrase that I've come up with in my life. I've heard it many times. The sense of being somewhere and feeling profoundly unworthy of being where you are. Imposter syndrome is this fear that we don't belong. This fear that we don't deserve the blessings and the gifts that show up in our lives. It's ultimately, obviously, an ego trip. Maybe it's not obvious to you, but let me break it down for a second why imposter syndrome is ultimately an ego trip. Imposter syndrome is ultimately an ego trip because it focuses on ourselves and our identities rather than any service. recenter our own selves and ask questions about us and do we deserve, and ultimately, where does asking the question about whether you deserve something or not lead you? The thief of joy is comparison. Because how does one become worthy? How does one deserve anything? Well, you have to come up with some kind of rubric, some kind of structure. And where do you build that from? Well, you build it from the materials around you, i.e. your co-workers, or your co-vacationers, or whatever, the people in the house with you. And you say, well, am I worthy of this? Well, I don't think that guy's worthy of it, and he's got it, so clearly I must be worthy, right? Like, you have to, on some level, start comparing yourself to other people, and ultimately, if your value is known in comparison, you're only as good as the people you think you're better than. So you have to set up a hierarchy of people to find yourself in if you know your value by comparison. Which ultimately means some people are better than you and some people aren't worth your time. Is this how Jesus works? No. Is this how ego works? Yeah. Absolutely. Imposter syndrome is a manifestation of ego. Imposter syndrome is the temptation that the devil had for Jesus in the wilderness. How does Jesus work when he encounters devils and demons in other people? He names them, and then he silences them, and then you're gone, right? I see you, shut up, go away. That is a pattern of Jesus encountering demonic forces. He doesn't argue with them. He does here in this, well, the text that we're not reading, but the text that comes right after this in the wilderness, because I think he's learning how to do this at this point. Because this is the beginning of the public affirmation of his ministry. This is when all eyes are on Jesus, which is a time when this temptation to egocentrism is so strong. The time when it is so likely that one is going to be knocked off course because they ask themselves, are you sure about this? Is it really me? Am I worthy of this? This is the time. And so, of course, he argues with the devil, and the devil knows scripture really well. Fortunately, so does Jesus. But ultimately, at the end of the day, the devil wants to keep arguing, and Jesus is like, shush! Goodbye. And ultimately, for the rest of scripture, that's exactly how Jesus encounters and responds to demonic forces. He doesn't give them time or energy. He doesn't play nice. He doesn't talk to them. Because they're always going to find reasons to show you why you're not worth it, why you don't deserve it, why you're fake and phony. Come on now, you know that your ego is incredibly intelligent and very creative and very good at undermining your thoughts. That's why he's just got to tell them, shut up and go away. Because it's only going to get better at arguing with you. The part of you that hates you is really good at showing you everything you ever screwed up in your whole life. Right? And especially when there's a public affirmation, then it's just got even more to show you how you're a fake and a liar and you don't deserve it. And how dare they promote you above whoever. Is that so often, especially with work stuff, did we not interview for that job? Did we not write up a resume? Did we not have to go through a bunch of hoops? We got here. Why are we still trying to earn being here? Instead of being here and doing the thing that we're now empowered to do, we're like, but, are you sure? And then what are we doing? We're not doing the thing. We're not making the change. We're not speaking the truth. We're not doing the justice and mercy. We're not doing the work of God because we're all caught up in it. But I just don't know. I should be the one doing it. Oh, goodness. And then comparison. Oh, God, we want to talk about. Let's just spend some time comparing ourselves to other people, comparing our jobs to other jobs, comparing our churches to other churches, comparing our families to other families. Oh, boy, howdy. Talk about not doing anything but being exhausted. Right? I'm getting exhausted just thinking about it. What if, just magically, somehow, no matter where we were, no matter what we were doing, no matter what was in front of us, our conclusion about ourselves was, I'm a child of God, beloved and worthy. Period. No matter what I have in front of me, no matter what opportunity, no matter what challenge, no matter what burden, no matter what call is on my life, I start from the assumption that I am a beloved child of God, sacred and worthy. Demon doesn't know how to talk to that. Satan doesn't know what to say to that. No, you're not. Shut up. Go away. I got stuff to do. How have you ever heard of growth mindset? It's like pop psychology, I'm going to say, sociology, going around a lot lately. If you haven't, Google it, watch a YouTube video. Good stuff. I'll distill it for you if you want. The meaning of growth mindset at the end of the day is, I'm here, and I'm going to change. I'm here right now, and I'm going to change. It's kind of like the principles of particle physics. You can know where a thing is, or you can know how fast it's going, but you can't know both at the same time, right? So, like, I'm here right now, and these are my capacities, and I do not know how to cross-stitch.
Hi.
Yet. Right? I don't know how to do it yet. Not, I don't know how to do it, I can't do it, but I can't do it at the moment. I can't do it right now. But I'm a person who is constantly evolving and changing and growing and learning and becoming. I'm in process. I'm a human in process. I'm not a human product. Therefore, whatever I don't know how to do is the thing I don't know how to do right now. Right? And that I could. Growth mindset invites us into a future orientation instead of a past orientation. Not, I didn't, but I'm not. Man, I could, I might, but I don't know how to do it yet. It's like, how many of you have ever heard someone say, or you yourself have said, I'm not very flexible. Right? I'm not very flexible. I was literally in a gathering with my family, and we're talking about physical therapy, because that's what happens when your parents are getting older. You have lots of conversations about that. And everybody around the room said, well, whoa, I'm just not very flexible. Well, I'm not very flexible. Maybe we're just not a very flexible family. And I was listening to it, and I was like, I don't stretch. And they were all like, well, I don't stretch either. And I'm like, you wonder why we're not very flexible. Because I knew somebody who was in school for a physical therapy degree program, and one of the first things they did, the very first class they had, everybody kind of drew straws, and some people had to stretch 60 minutes a day, every day, for that 10-week quarter, which I thought there better only been one of those straws. Now I'm sitting in that dude who's just like super pumped all the time. I would not draw that, I'd give it that. And then there were people that got 30 minutes, people that got 10 minutes, people that got 5 minutes, and people that got 1 minute. And all of them had to people log that they actually did this every day for 10 weeks, right? And then they had a baseline measurement of how far they could stretch, and then they had measurement at the end, right? And the dude who stretched 60 minutes a day, right, was just a rubber chicken by the end of it, right? Of course. Of course. His gains were just astronomical. The people who stretched 1 minute a day had increases that were like 30%. Huge increases. Like, in fact, as it went, the increases here were massive, and they were only slightly more massive as you went all the way to stretching 60 minutes a day. You're getting my point here, right? But if we're worried about whether we're flexible enough to even stretch, we don't do anything. And then we don't become more flexible. We remain inflexible in so many ways. Saying I'm not flexible is about my identity. Saying I don't stretch is actually an honest assessment of who I am and what I do. And it doesn't necessarily need to be judgmental because I'm not doing that because I'm doing something else, right? Like, sometimes we think that if we say we're not doing something, it's like a condemnation of us. I want you to just think for a hot second how terrible that idea is. How many things could you right now say you are not doing? Man, that's a short list. God, if you were defined by all of the things that you're not doing, none of us would be worth nothing, right? I mean, how many of you are out there advocating that we don't build coal-fired power plants? Oh, you're not doing that. Oh. How many of you are out there advocating that we stop whaling in the South Pacific? Oh, well. Oh. Right? Because somebody's pet project is everybody's pet project, right? Y'all know that person? It's like, wait, you're not composting? How dare you? What's my point? My point is not to rag on that one person because composting is very important. My point is to say, the question is, what is God calling you to do? Where does your life, where does your brain, where is your heart so full of energy and passion and vitality and creativity? Where are you drawn to? What just gets you revved up? And are you willing to guess? Are you willing to trust? Are you willing to believe that that's actually God talking to you? That perhaps the reason you're so pumped about something, that you're so excited about Beatles, is that perhaps, just perhaps, if you were somebody who said yes to that, and yes to God, that some way, somehow, God, in God's infinite wisdom, might see a path that leads you to justice and mercy and power through your love of Beatles. Maybe it's through the love of the Beatles. All I'm saying is, the God that I know about can see out in front of all of us the cone of possibilities, right? The choices that we make, and the choices that those choices will lead to, and the choices that those choices will lead to. Now, a good chess player sees like 7 or 8 moves ahead, right? But even the best chess player doesn't see all the possibilities all the time. And even the computer isn't as good as some chess masters at this, and the computer supposedly can see all the things, right? So, God is at least a couple of steps above AI, I'm willing to believe. And just maybe, the thing that is on fire in you, the thing that really pisses you off, or the thing that really excites you, the thing that's just, you just want to tell people about it, because it's so cool, that sunset, right? That work, that hospitality, that love. Maybe, just maybe, the reason you're so jazzed about it is that God is just waiting for you to just step into it a little bit so God can move you a little more to activate you as an agent of mercy and justice in the world. You don't gotta go do something else. You don't gotta go love something else. Because your God is already with you, shot through you, knows you intimately better than you know yourself. You don't gotta be different. You just gotta be you. Stop worrying about whether you're enough or not. Stop worrying about whether you deserve it or not. Stop worrying about whether somebody else should be where you are and say, here I am, beloved child of God, let's do this thing. Because it's not about you. It's not about you. It's about God. And I'm pretty sure that Jesus stopped wasting his time asking, why me, the minute you learn how to abandon